What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 69.
Get 69?
A little tickle in the front, tickle in the back, player. Get Out the Room, a horror and pop culture podcast. We talk about whatever we like and some of the things we didn't like. You can find us on Wicked Radio Network, the home team. You can find us on Podomatic, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Listenably, your number one place for POC content on the web. I am your host, Day, and as always, I got my man Scott with me. What's going on, Scott?
Not much.
You sounded real lively tonight, man. That's good.
Yes, sir.
I had to get a little caffeine so I could be up and peppy and ready.
I currently have water. That's what I got.
What is that about? That is just boring.
You know what? Honestly, we are out of everything, including milk. So I need a grocery run.
Man, it's no good, bro. I would let you hold something, but we're not close. Well, as you all heard from our little jokey joke, we are at episode 69. And there's a couple of different aspects of what we're going to cover today. The loss of a horror icon, as well as the rolling along of some horror television. So before we get into the meat of the show, let's go ahead and kind of start with Fear the Walking Dead. Still doing great numbers for AMC. I'm not sure how much longer this can last. But you want to talk about what you've been thinking through three episodes on that show, man?
You know what? I when we first covered it, I was mildly entertained at the idea of a spinoff. And I gotta be honest, I just watched a couple days ago episode 3, and just before that I watched episode 2 for the first time because I was putting it off because I just wasn't really interested. I can't tell you what it is. I can't put my finger on it exactly until I just thought of this yesterday or today. I think it's because we know what's going to happen to all these characters. They're building up to something that we already know the outcome of. And it's taking it away from, my expectation. Because I don't care about any of these characters in an event that I already know a lot about from being on the other side of the country. And I almost feel like maybe a better spinoff idea might have been, what if it's set a year after Rick's group in another country or somewhere else where civilization's built up? Or, I think I mentioned this in the last episode, why not focus on another country where there might not be a zombie apocalypse, but they're wondering what's going on in America during a zombie apocalypse. The reason my mind goes to all these places is I'm just not really interested in Fear the Walking Dead. I'm watching it because it's The Walking Dead and I'm a Walking Dead fan, and I'm curious to see if and when and how they may explain how the zombies came about, which I still am not convinced they will do at all. Or B, maybe tie into or have some Easter eggs about the classic group, which I don't know how they would, seeing as how they're on the other side of the country.
Yeah, I mean, time-wise, it doesn't really match up, and that's fine.
But it's just, I think the season's only 6 episodes. I think I'm gonna try and last through the 6 episodes. But
gotta stick it out, man.
It's not an entertaining. Well. And that's—it's not that it's not entertaining. It's just—I don't know what it is. It's just—I'm not interested. I'm not invested in any of these characters.
I get you. I think the biggest aspect is nobody gives a shit about the characters. The characters are almost too extreme. Like the mother is the badass, ride or die archetype. Cliff Curtis is the do good everyman. That kind of like, wait a minute, how did this dude get divorced? You know what I mean? Like, he's the greatest man of life. Right. Why aren't you still with this dude?
And the typical drug dealer or drug who the mom is giving drugs to.
Yeah, like that. It's just so strange. I feel like that was a stretch and a bad stretch for them just to create a character that would put them in kind of, that would strain relationships. I feel like his whole narrative is there to strain the relationships of the other characters in the show. And, yep. You know, to make their whole situation a little bit less easy. And, I don't really like his character. I think some people find they don't mind it. And I'm like, it's cool, but I just find him
and
boring.
And then you got, on top of all that, awful decision-making.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I don't blame all the awful decision-making. I do blame on, like, willful negligence that I've been seeing. You know what I mean? Like, you saw your neighbor get her face ate off. You're like, you know what? Let's play Monopoly. That sounds like a great idea. Like, that's the one where I'm going to call bullshit on. But, kind of the bad decision-making. Who knows what we would do in an apocalypse where all the regular shit that we take for granted, like stoplights, the patterns of those lights working the way that we expect them to. Imagine if that shit just all of a sudden doesn't happen one day, right? So that type of shit you don't really take into account. But the idea that you know that somebody's eating your neighbor, gotta take that into account. And y'all need to do some shit differently. Because the way it's set up now, everybody looks dumb.
Yeah, pretty much.
Except the Hispanic dude. He is so gangster.
Predator 2.
Yeah, he is so gangster.
Yes, he is. Like when she went out there and she was in the latest episode when she was about ready to kill her neighbor and didn't, and he just says to himself that she's weak and just walks back to the house. It's like, see, he gets it. He gets it.
Now, one of the things I didn't necessarily like about that particular, and I think it ruined the scene for me, actually. The whole deal where he and Cliff Curtis were talking about, who was even or who did what for who. I just felt like that was a really strange conversation to be having at that time.
Yep.
And I feel like there's a lot of conversations like that.
There are.
Those conversations are like the worst parts of the original show when they're not moving any of the plot along and you're just forced to watch them talk for no reason. In season 2 when they were just kind of staring off into the brush and the trees and shit. And that's what I felt like a lot of that was. It's just, manufactured drama or manufactured non-chemistry. And it's just, I didn't like it. I don't give a shit about any of these characters. I kind of want them all to die.
Wouldn't that be something if the end of the first season everybody died? That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. There's no way AMC would do that, though.
Hell no.
My
God, that would be sweet.
It would be pretty cool. There's no way you'd kill your opportunity to come up with a second season. To get this Walking Dead money.
Just make another spinoff. That would be the premise.
Oh yeah, so every off season you get an entirely new cast and just create a different perspective. So
it would be kind of like a brand new horror movie, but it's a horror TV show. New cast, new premise.
Yeah.
New
timeline within the zombie apocalypse.
There you go. So instead of at the beginning of the apocalypse in Los Angeles, let's do a year later in Florida, or a year later or a year later in, or maybe focus on the survival of a homeless person during the apocalypse, or the survival of what's the president up to during the apocalypse, or something like that. I mean,
just different takes on it.
And they, you know what? And Walking Dead does that a little bit with the webisode or the web series that they do that tie into the main show. And
yeah, I've never
they're just
seen that.
Mess of that. I watched the one. Remember in the opening episode, the one zombie that the girl, like the half zombie, that was really well done makeup wise that Rick had to shoot.
Yeah.
They did a web series on that character, how she came to be.
Okay.
So that was just kind of, that's a creative take on just a really small part that is just kind of, you know, it's kind of cool for the fans. You know, if you want to watch more, you can. If you don't want to watch more, you don't have to.
Yeah.
And Fear the Walking Dead has been hyped and been promoted to death.
Correct.
And it wants to be better than it is.
Yeah, I don't necessarily even know if it wants to be better. I think it just wants to be on the same, on par with its big brother, and it hasn't proven the ability to do that just yet. So,
no, it hasn't.
You know, I think we need.
Well,
they're not defining characters
first.
Hmm?
I mean, it has to come up with some cool characters first. I mean,
that's what I was gonna say. They're not defining characters yet. There's nobody you fuck with like that. You know, Kim Dickens is great, and she's acting circles around everybody else involved in this entire fucking show. Literally everybody. Yeah. There's nobody who's fucking with her outside of the old Hispanic cat.
Cliff Curtis is decent.
Yeah, he's decent. He's cool. But the class of the show is with her. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's cool. I don't dislike it, but at the same time, I'm not really trying to be for all that. I could not see it and be perfectly okay.
Right. Oh man. God damn, that's good. All right, so maybe this is as good a time as any. I'm sorry. I've got Scream 2 on in the background, and I just saw Dewey run up to the house.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that fun? Isn't that what you wanted?
Maybe.
I thought so. I'm not sure. But yeah. We're going to make the most out of Fear the Walking Dead. We're going to keep watching. See how it goes.
Yep.
But, yeah. So,
I mean, that's as much excitement as I have. I mean,
it's difficult to be excited for this show, man. There's nothing, there's no catch. There's no aha moment. There's no, that was fucking tight. You know, in the pilot for the original, you latched on to Rick. You latched on to everything. There were great moments from the very beginning. The fucking riot that they dropped us into in the middle of Los Angeles was so fake and ridiculous and completely unnecessary. And like, why would this even be happening right now?
Well, keep in mind, in the first episode of season 1-2, we also got to meet Morgan.
Right.
And he was, his story, you got involved in his story immediately.
Yeah.
When you saw the terror in his face when he saw his wife outside. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes because Lenny James is just a great actor, but that character was memorable. Same with Rick. In that one episode, we've had three episodes now, Fear, and I don't feel that way on for anybody. They're all instantly forgettable. They're all just stock characters that are in for a show to try and capitalize on the name.
That's it.
And now look, we didn't get the comic booky characters in Walking Dead immediately. Daryl wasn't there using his crossbow just yet. I mean, to the extent he does now, there was no Michonne, there was no Governor, there was no even crazy Shane at this point. Maybe it's going to take some time to meet these characters, but I mean, I hope something happens with some of these main characters because I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I don't know. AMC, you build up enough cachet where I'm still going to watch it, but I don't know.
Correct.
Begrudgingly. Yeah.
See, the spinoff for Breaking Bad was fantastic, but I don't know that I'm going to say that
for this Walking
Dead just yet.
Yeah, gotta have strong lead. I don't think this one has a magnetic lead, I should say.
Correct.
Bob Odenkirk definitely is that for Better Call Saul. I don't know if we have that particular type of magnetism here.
No.
No, and the show is going to falter because of that, but we'll see. We'll see. I think to some extent they're like, well, the shit got zombies. Motherfuckers go and watch, so.
Yep. That is what they're thinking. I mean, that's yep. absolutely
what they're thinking. What else do you need?
And that's people are watching. And yeah, it'll exactly. get a second season if it hasn't already gotten one.
Right. Like, that's happening.
Oh, absolutely. So.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Really quickly, another horror show that's out right now. The Strain is still happening. My God.
How's that?
That show's hard, man. That shit is a fucking chore to get through, dude.
Oh, man, I'm glad I didn't watch that.
Yeah, no, that's a good opt-out. It's a good opt-out.
Like I said, I caught a glimpse of the first episode of season two or one of the early episodes, and I just saw the vampire with, like, the ball sack on his throat.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know anything about, and it, like, you know, it looked cool in the context I saw it. It was just kind of a cool, creepy scene, but that's really what I remember is, like, a ball sack throat vampire.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty memorable.
Yeah. And Corey Stahl with a really bad wig.
They finally got rid of that shit, but it took until, like, episode 6 and season 2 to get rid of it.
What, did they shave him?
Yeah, you know, he had to go on a little espionage mission. The folks didn't know who he was, so he did that. He had to shave it all off.
Oh, okay. See, that's the Corey Stahl that's House of Cards and Ant-Man Corey Stahl. That's the one I like. Yes, I threw Ant-Man in there.
I was going to ask you where the fuck that come from, but, you know, I think Corey Stahl's a really accomplished actor.
It's recent, and it was good. And he was good in it.
He's the Yellow Jacket?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that dude. So I want him to win. But this show, if you want to talk about nonsensical ass decisions and motherfuckers doing shit that don't make no sense, this show is the worst.
Throwing it under the bus if we're talking nonsensical decisions.
Look.
The Visit. Enough said.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We may have to get in that shit too. But check me out, man. Like, this show is so bad, they had to recast the lead kid because he was that bad. Off top.
Oh, man. That's not good.
Yeah, off top. Very first fucking season. He's already recast because he was that bad. So.
Wow.
Yeah, let that sink in.
Yikes.
So, you know, the kid that's here now is bad, too. And he makes terrible decisions. He just does shit. You know, like, why would you do that? Why the fuck would you do that? You know, whatever. The show is not great. The book wasn't. In hindsight, the book is kind of hokey. It was entertaining, but there were tons of little holes in it, and the translation to screen has not been great.
Doesn't Guillermo del Toro have his hand in this?
Yeah, he was all over this. Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan.
Wow. I mean, you just normally del Toro doesn't really fuck up, so.
Yeah, and the visuals aren't even that tight. Which is a shit that he's literally known for. So
he did, now it's what is he doing though? Is he directing?
He's a producer. I don't think he's actually on here. I think he directed the first episode. I think he did the pilot to, you know, get them off, and they never really took off from there.
Gotcha.
But yeah, whatever. We're gonna move on from this shit. It's completely unnecessary, man. Let's talk about something better. Something interesting. Something everybody can feel. A couple weeks ago, the horror world lost one of its pillars and went heavyweights. Wes Craven passed away from battle with cancer, brain cancer, and just has left a void within horror that will never be able to be filled. You know, this is a guy that created meta horror. This is a guy who, you know, reinvigorated the slasher, you know, along with John Carpenter for Halloween. And, you know, without John Carpenter and Wes Craven, the resurgence of the slasher in the early to mid 80s does not happen.
Yeah, that's true.
It just doesn't fucking happen. You know, mm-hmm. Halloween brought the genre to the forefront, but Freddy Krueger took it completely off planet and into stratosphere. Somewhere new. Took that bitch to Venus, and then it went to Saturn. You know, this. But his contributions are just so huge, man. Between Nightmare on Elm Street, and then to Scream, and then to Vampire in Brooklyn, and then to Vampire in Brooklyn.
Damn it.
Yeah, but
gosh,
dude's
a movie I've never seen, but I can't help but think of that Juno poster.
Well, I mean, it's the title, it's Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he can't win them all, and it is true. He definitely can't win them all.
Nah, his track record ain't great, but I mean, it's okay when you have, you know, icons on your resume, dog. You can miss a couple.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things, you know. John Carpenter even hit, you know, everybody's got shitty movies.
Everyone has a shitty movie.
And Wes Craven, you know, what we remember, you know, what I remember about Wes Craven is Freddy Krueger. I remember Freddy Krueger, and I remember the Scream movies. I mean, the Scream movies came out right when I was, you know, what year is the first Scream movie? What was that?
I thought 19? It was 97.
97, wow, okay. That sounds about right.
Let me find out. Keep talking. I mean, I'll give you that answer. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Teenager, when Scream came out, I was 12 years old, and Scream was one of those movies. It's one of the earlier movies of that kind that I had seen, and it did. I was in that generation. I got reintroduced to horror through that movie.
Oh, absolutely. You know, horror had died by 96, man. You know,
sure.
When, and this is definitely part of,
well,
part
we were, that was when it was, we were getting into the death of the original sequel franchises like Friday and Nightmare. And,
right. Right. Nothing new had taken hold. There was lots of one-offs like Shocker. another Wes Craven stinker.
Right.
That was fun. But, you know, by that point, there just wasn't a whole lot for horror. Horror was that was the Friday night date movie. If it wasn't a comedy, you were going to go see a horror film where, you know, your boo would get scared and she would jump in your lap, and you was off to, you know, enjoying a good evening. Those midnight popcorn cutout hole maneuvers was happening off to those horror movies, man. And people weren't going to check for them anymore. You know, it just wasn't date movies anymore.
Well, then we get a slasher with an iconic opening scene, and we get a whole new, I mean, honestly, almost a whole new subgenre of type of, you know, of meta slashers. I mean, Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Urban Legend.
Yep.
I mean, all these movies started coming out, and
absolutely
Scream
right.
is responsible for that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
Wes Craven is responsible for that, and what's interesting is, and we were talking about maybe starting one and leading up to Scream, but if you look at Scream leading back, he had his hand in the meta horror with Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which was a really good late Freddy Krueger movie, and he started the meta there, and that led into Scream, so you saw the kind of the origin of the Scream idea in that movie. And of course that had Freddy Krueger, which his greatest creation is still Freddy Krueger from the original Nightmare, which is one of the greatest horror movies of all time. And may I recommend, for those of you who are looking for something good with October coming up, a great Wes Craven trilogy. Instead of watching the Scream trilogy, which is still a pretty good trilogy to watch, watch the original Nightmare, New Nightmare, and then Scream. Watch those three movies.
It's a really nice natural progression.
Absolutely. It's a natural progression of horror, and it's a natural progression of slasher, and it's just a good – that right there would be a Wes Craven crash course for someone who wanted a crash course on him. You get his two best movies as well as one that I think is underrated. New Nightmare is probably his most underrated film.
I agree with you. I'm with you. You know, I think one of the things that people forget about Scream is that nobody was behind it in the beginning. Nobody wanted to touch it, you know, particularly because they were like, wait a minute, you're going to take our main marketing person and kill her 7 minutes into the film, he's like, yeah, shit's revolutionary. And the fact that he actually was able to do it speaks volumes, man. The motherfucker was a visionary. And it's upsetting that he's not going to be around.
Well, I mean, he out-Hitchcocked Hitchcock with Psycho. I mean, Hitchcock kills the main character halfway through the film.
Right.
Wes Craven, fuck that, I'm doing it in the opening scene.
Yep. For opening scene, Drew got to go.
Yep.
It changes the way that rules that you've established for movies are no longer apply at this point.
Correct. It also benefited from having a relatively popular cast at the time. I mean, Nev Campbell was coming off of Party of Five.
Party of Five.
Courtney Cox was on Friends, and you get who else is in there? Rose McGowan, Matthew Lillard, who's the boyfriend? What's that actor's name?
Stu. Hold on. No, keep talking. I'll get that info for you.
It kind of benefited too, I think. They, you know, not only was Drew Barrymore the one they were marketing, but they marketed the entire cast because it was a cast that was recognizable to people of my generation. Oh, that's the girl from.
Yeah,
oh, that's the guy.
True.
Oh, that's the guy from. That's the dude from. I mean, not to mention, you know, Henry Winkler got a nod in there. I always forget about Henry Winkler. The Fonzie was in there.
The Fonz don't change. He gets changed shit all the time. That's why nothing if not consistent.
Also, a little nod to Freddy Krueger.
Absolutely.
It's in the Henry Winkler scene, before he goes down, there's a guy out mopping the floor, the janitor, and he's dressed in the Freddy Krueger hat and sweater, and his name is Fred, and it's played by Wes Craven. That's Wes Craven's cameo in the movie.
Also, so incredibly meta. God.
Absolute. Fantastic. It really is fantastic.
Yeah, you know, this is a dude that understands the world of what he's creating. He understands it so well that he can interject things in a way that most people can't. You know, I kind of liken it to when motherfuckers talk about time travel, where, like, if you don't truly understand the ramifications of the decisions on the front end, your time travel storyline will always fall apart. I feel that way about Wes. Like, he understands both aspects of the story that he's telling.
Sure.
Yeah, which kind of makes him, you know,
He did fall into the sequel, into a sequel quicksand a little bit. You know, I really like Scream 2 as well. I think Scream 2 kind of takes what the first one did. It doesn't do it near as well, but what it does well is we get meta within meta now. We've got a movie based on Scream in Scream called Stab that the characters are watching and reliving from the first movie, and it's just kind of a, you know, it's a cheesier, goofier version of the first movie, which speaks volumes really about the slasher genre as a whole, back to front in the 70s and 80s and in the 90s of all these sequels that respond from this, and remakes that we're getting now, and all this garbage and crap that we're getting now for the most part.
Yep.
He managed to grab that in the opening scene.
Yeah.
Is also a really great scene where Omar Epps and Jada Pinkett are...
Jada Pinkett Smith.
They're going to they're going to the premiere of Stab, and it's really great that everybody's wearing the costume, and the killer can go and kill these people at the movie theater without anybody knowing any different.
And, you know, here's the greatest thing about that. And I think this is kind of overlooked as just being part of the scene setup, that Wes didn't just have everybody in the ghost face masks for the sake of doing that. It was also a throwback to the way that he saw horror movies and the crowds that would go to see them. The exuberance, the excitement, you know, the be right there, all of that shit is how he viewed people going to see a really good horror film. So you take all that, there's this joyous kind of occasion that we've got a new slasher that we came to see, that happiness. Yeah, you don't movie theater. You know, that shit's good. Omar Epps took it in the head through the stall, but Jada got it in front of everybody.
And you know, he's really known for, I mean, really, even the opening scene of Scream 3, isn't the opening scene in 3 is when Cotton Weary goes down. And that's a great scene, too. And really, to me, that scene is good just because it's a good shocking scene. It doesn't really do the meta commentary as much, but they take a main character from the trilogy and kill him in the opening scene.
And you know what they also do? They play with you really well so you can figure out who is the killer. Who's the person I'm supposed to be, you know, focusing on. They don't give you that, and it's really good. You know, even within that first scene, they play with you. You know, you're not sure who it is.
Right. And that's really a lot can be said about the entire trilogy of movies that way.
Yeah.
And it's and I keep saying trilogy. Now we know that there's been a fourth film as well. I've only seen the movie once. I didn't really care for it. I felt that it was maybe beating a dead horse a little bit. I was past the generation of understanding it. Maybe it was an attempt to try and bring Scream back to, you know, the younger audiences to give them a new, or, you know, just a new horror film. I just kind of saw it as just going back to the well for no reason. And, it just, you know, and I was telling Damon this earlier, you know, one of the best parts in Scream 2 is they kill one of the main characters in the series. One of the best parts of Scream 3 is they kill one of the main characters in the series. In Scream 4, they have an opportunity to do that. And they don't do it, which I guess it's like one step forward, two steps back type thing.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I guess I just didn't see the need for it. You know, but of course I was there to go see it because Wes Craven's earned, especially with the Scream movies, has earned a, you know, at least to go check out what he's got up his sleeve for a new one. Like if he were to have done a new Nightmare movie, you know, you're going to go check it out regardless of.
I'm going. You
know, yeah, exactly. Because you know he's got Robert Englund coming at you, and you know he's going to bring at least a scare, if not hopefully more than one. So, you know, the Scream films, though, kind of, I think, brought back after he had a lot of missteps after Nightmare on Elm Street. There were very, very, very hit or miss. I have not seen most of his films at all. But my understanding, you know, Shocker, for example, I hear nothing but just bad things about
it's
Shocker.
It's cheesy and not great. Yeah, it's, you know, even for a Saturday afternoon film, it's not great.
See, and then that's not very good. I mean, the other Wes Craven movie that I had seen off the top is Red Eye, and that's not really a horror movie, but, you know, and it's a mildly decent film. It's not one I really remember much about. I know Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy are in it. And if that tells you anything too. So Scream kind of gave new life into horror and really, I think, gave new life into Wes Craven.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. It's enabled him to bridge the gap from some of his earlier work to people who are in the next demographic. So.
Absolutely.
Worked well for him, you know, and it's sad. But, you know, one of the things that I think people don't know about Wes is that he started out shooting porn films under a pseudonym, under a different name. So you won't be able to just go into your classics and be like, let me find Wes Craven, because his name's not on there. He's under a pseudonym or whatever.
Nope. But the first movie that his name is on, though, it might as well be a really cheaply made, stupid porn. Last House on the Left.
Yeah, Last House on the Left. You know, another revenge flick, kind of in the vein of I Spit in Your Grave. This is the height of cautionary tales. All right? This is the height of if you don't do right, you'll die, which is kind of a theme within horror movies for a long time leading up to Nightmare on Elm Street, where if you have sex, you're fair game.
Mm-hmm.
By any means necessary. If you do it at any time, your number is now on the clock, dog. if you were safe before, you were on the clock now. So, yeah.
And this is one that you know, this is a movie that really kind of established that rule even before Friday the 13th did. I mean, Friday the 13th kind of popularized it, made it more well known and whatnot. But this movie has that, has the seeds of that in it. And,
yeah, it's really overt. It's really over the head in this one.
It is. You know, I just watched this for the first time yesterday, actually. This is a movie that I had been meaning to see for a while. Actually, I didn't really care for it. It's very, the tones jump around quite a bit. There's a lot of weird music in places that I don't think music should be in. Bitter in Your Grave. I mean, that thing is violent and just too graphic. And this movie is not. I mean, they cut away from all the stuff that you're, you know, that you think you're watching, but you're not, which that part of it's clever. But it's just, it jumps around too much for me, for my liking. And it's just that the music doesn't work and the acting's not very good. And it's just, I don't know. I guess I was surprised that I didn't enjoy it not to say I knew what it was about. I didn't go in thinking I would enjoy it, watching people get, you know, tortured and raped and whatnot. But I guess I expected it to be more horrific in general. And it just, it kind of was disappointing in a way, but it shows how good he got after that.
Not long after, he got great. But, I think the biggest part of just recognizing that maybe the shit ain't for you. Not every Wes Craven film is going to be great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know that movie. So that movie was made for $87,000. And it made $3.1 million.
Yeah.
And this is 1992.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yep, makes perfect sense.
Pretty early.
That's your path right there.
That's it.
That is it. Last House on the Left. It's kind of hardcore in the revenge. You know, they've built up enough sympathy so that by the time the revenge comes, A, you're looking forward, and B, you're not upset by any of it. Unless you're upset by all of it. So right. To speak. You know?
Yep.
But yeah,
pretty much.
It's early West, you know, just gotten out of, so a lot of the lighting choices are kind of reek of porn, so to speak. You know, I assume he didn't have a DP on set or anything like that, but it's very strange to see where people start and where they end up. You know, especially when you recognize that Wes is, he could still pull off a masterpiece of a film.
Yep.
So. It's like, wow, that was such a shitty showing here. What the hell happened? You know, yep, you realize the dude was doing shit for him. He wasn't doing it for us. He's making films for himself. So, yeah. Well, it's a sad, sad day in horror, man. Anything else you want to talk about Wes Craven before we move on?
I have so many of his movies earmarked just to go watch that I'm almost embarrassed to say as a horror fan that I haven't seen a lot of them. You know, like we were talking before, I've never seen the original Hills Have Eyes, and yeah. I have seen the remake, and I guess the remake's okay. You know, I think the reason that I didn't go back and see the Hills Have Eyes was because I didn't enjoy the remake as much as I was hoping to, I suppose. But that's not really a good, you know, that's not a good gauge. But another one that Damon had said maybe to check out was The People Under the Stairs.
Yeah.
Another one that I hadn't seen that one either, so.
Yeah, People Under the Stairs is a good film. I shouldn't say good. It's an entertaining film. It's also a film that kind of fell through the cracks during the Pet Sematary time and stuff. It's definitely one to check out. I think A.J. Langer, isn't it? And once you see her, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So,
okay.
Hey, go ahead and check that out.
Good stuff.
Checker. We'll see. We talked about the movie that was Shocker. I don't really think there's a whole lot left. Oh, there's Curse, the Christina Ricci and Justin Long film, which I think a lot of people took for granted. Judith Greer was in it. Judith Greer, I think her name is.
Curse. You know what? I don't know that I saw. I don't think I did see this. It looks familiar, but.
All right. Well, then I'm not going to ruin it for you. But yeah, that was a pretty good flick too. Yeah.
Well, see, there you go, man. There, I mean, it's got a. This is another movie that has a lot of recognizable faces and whatnot in it.
Yeah, so. Man, Christina Ricci, Justin Long, Judy Greer. There's a lot of people on that one.
Oh no, you're saying Justin Long, Jesse Eisenberg.
You're right. Yeah, it was Eisenberg. You're right. You're absolutely right.
And this must have been. This is what Eisenberg before he got popular.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is
okay.
Long before Facebook, dude.
Ella Maya is in this movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. A little hip hop songstress.
Shannon Elizabeth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick Offerman.
Yeah, but this is
wow.
You know, much further before Ron Swanson, so.
Yeah,
he's not Ron, but could be.
Wow. Huh. Okay.
Yeah, strong. You know, strong cast. Not going to turn out the way you think it is, though.
Oh boy, is that good or bad?
I mean, you got to figure it out for yourself, player.
Oh boy.
Yeah, pretty much.
He also did a drama film, Music of the Heart.
That one didn't go over well, right?
Meryl Streep, Angela Bassett, and Gloria Estefan.
Wow, that's a fucking cast.
Mixed to slightly positive reviews.
Okay. Yeah. All right, mixed to slightly positive. Okay.
But the lead song on the soundtrack is Gloria Estefan and NSYNC.
There you go.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably a movie I won't watch.
Never see.
Just going to throw that one out there.
Yeah, never going to see that one.
No.
I would love to tell you that we're going to do a more comprehensive Wes Craven thing, but dude's work, when he was on, man, this motherfucker's a master. I think
we may go back into the Scream films a little more in depth.
Yep.
Because I think they warrant a little more. We've done a lot of the big franchises. Scream really is one of the bigger horror franchises. So, because we could certainly go in and talk about Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox and Goofy fucking Dewey running around.
Yep.
So. But Wes Craven as a whole is, you know, we've beat Nightmare to death a lot on the show.
Yep.
Scream, you know, we've glossed over it here on how really, really great Scream is. You know, the rest of his filmography is kind of a see for yourself, hit and miss type thing. And, you know, it is what it is. But what Wes Craven gave us is he gave us Freddy Krueger and Scream. I mean, and that even if those are the only two things he ever did,
right?
That still would put him on a Mount Rushmore of horror.
Hell yeah! I mean, there's a lot of people who are never going to get one influential piece throughout their career. This motherfucker had multiple, man.
Right.
So, I mean, he's a beast. He always will be a beast. Rest in peace to our guy Wes Craven.
Yes, sir.
But Scott, I heard you saw a little M. Night Shyamalan.
You know, as time's going on, I'm actually learning I'm in the minority here. The movie's getting
which is really strange.
Movie's getting pretty decent reviews. I don't want to say good or great. I guess I don't want to say great. It is getting good reviews. I caught a screening of The Visit last week before it actually came out, or whenever it did, 2 weeks ago, whenever it dropped. And I did not care for it.
Okay.
I was.
You mean a grandma with a mouth full of fucking crackers screaming Yahtzee is not your idea of a good song?
No. Wait. Hold on. Have you seen it?
I've seen some parts of it. Yeah.
Okay. You've seen parts of it. Okay.
Yeah. Extended trailers and such.
It's you know, listen. There is a neat little horror movie tucked in there somewhere.
it's fighting its way out amongst all the jokes
and tonal shifts. There are, there are some, there are, God, the tonal shifts are really what gets me. And the worst part of the movie is one of the main characters is an aspiring little white rapper kid.
Yeah.
And I can't get over that. it's not entertaining. Like, I saw it with a pretty big crowd. It wasn't a packed theater, but it was a mostly packed theater. And everybody was laughing their ass off at this kid. And it was not entertaining to me. I didn't like him doing this and then there being something really creepy. Granted, there were creepy moments and there were jump scares galore in the movie, especially one that made me jump that was, dare I say, spine tingling. I mean, it was a great jump scare.
Wow.
But the opening scene, and this is just to give you a piece of this, there was a couple sitting next to me that walked out in the first 2 minutes of this film.
Two minutes.
I was shocked. I mean, I was happy to see have more arm room, but
credit's still rolling 2 minutes in, B.
It was, you know, we already got a glimpse of the little rapping kid. We got a glimpse of how the movie was shot. By the way, it's found footage. Well, not really found. It's kind of complicated. It's like documentary.
Yeah. Mockumentary. Well, not even mockumentary. It really is documentary.
It's true. It's shot like a documentary because that's kind of the idea. So, but they left, you know, that early in, and it was just kind of like, uh-oh. Now, is it the train wreck that his other movies have been?
The Happening?
No. No, it's not. It's not the Happening train wreck. Absolutely not.
The loss of all big budgets that was After Earth.
Yeah, correct. It's not the train wreck that were these movies. You know, like I said, there is something good tucked in there, but the ending to me was very disjointed. It tonally jumped around. I thought the main characters made some really, really terrible decisions in the movie that really took out of the story from them, not with them. And the ending's just jumps. There's three different endings, kind of.
All wrapped into one.
Well, there's a horrific ending, there's a dramatic ending, there's a comedic ending. And I didn't care for it. You know, I know others really liked it, and they think that M. Night's back to form. And, you know, what I will say is, I think it's his best movie in a while. That doesn't mean that it's a good movie.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that. I ain't really saying much. That's not real praise, bro.
It's not, and I don't mean it to be praise because I did not care for it. Yeah. I was disappointed.
Okay.
You know, but it was free, so.
So that's a win.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I may check it out. You know, I'm familiar with what it is and how it gets down. You know, I may have to pull a trigger on it. We'll see.
I mean, you know, with like I said, I was surprised that I didn't like it as much as I did because it is getting, for a horror movie especially, is getting good reviews. So,
yeah, it is very strange, and I'm trying to figure out, is it the comedy aspect of it that's allowing it to be rated so highly? That people are overlooking the other aspects of it?
People do like, well, see, like I said, there are some good scares in there.
Yeah.
And there is some good horror, but, you know, a lot of people are saying that they really like the comedy as well.
Everyone I've talked to they haven't talked about the horror at all. All they've talked about is the comedy.
Right.
Everyone tells me, you know, I laughed really well. I connected with the characters and, you know, thought that things were really funny for them in the beginning. So I don't know.
Well, now I will say, you know, so they go to stay with their grandparents and the couple, the actors playing the grandparents, they're good. I mean, they do good. They play good roles. I don't know. I'm fishing now, but, I didn't get all the praise. I keep saying praise. I mean, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, right? It's got 62%. For a horror movie, that's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, it is. That's actually quite good. Outside of something like It Follows or The Babadook,
something's going to be kind of transcend the genre a little.
you're next, something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, M. Night out here doing his thing. You know, the horror season about to kick up. You know, we saw that Krampus trailer. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not loving it as much as maybe my girl Joy is. She says she's been waiting for that Krampus for a while.
Well, I you know, there's a Krampus. Isn't there another? I think there's another one called, like, This Christmas or something. Or there's another Christmas movie coming out this year as well.
Well, I mean, is it like Black Christmas?
No. I don't know what it's called. It's like an anthology.
Okay.
Because I know there's another anthology called Nights of Halloween or Tales of Halloween. And it's 10 different directors, each directing a different Halloween-themed horror, like a horror short that all are connected together, kind of like a trick-or-treat.
Yeah.
That's out. Trying to name things that we really haven't talked about on the show. We got some casting news from The Purge 3, which is pretty good. Looking forward to that. You know, I think everything else we further cover, we know there's new Paranormal Activity coming out here soon.
Of course there is.
Which is supposedly the finale of the series.
Yeah, it's time. But that means we can get to see my girl Katie one more time, so I'm not upset about that. Yeah, was there anything else that we were looking at that was coming out? Oh, American Horror Story is going to start soon.
It is, with Lady Gaga.
Yep. Hotel. Hotel's going to be starting soon. You know, I think I'm a bigger fan of that than you are.
You are. I liked Freaks. I was actually at a horror convention this weekend on Saturday. I went with my cousin, and we went, and they had a lot of the actors from the Freaks. So they had the 2-foot-tall woman there, and she was sitting in a booth signing autographs next to the Amazon woman, which was kind of an amusing visual.
Amazon Eve.
And they had the Amazon Eve and the little Indian, the little Indian girl.
Yeah, apparently they're, like, really close in real life.
Well, so there are pictures online of them. When we were there, there were multiple people standing around, like, you know, looking at this, the Indian girl.
Yeah.
And she was drawing a crowd simply because, I mean, I gotta be honest, I've never seen anybody that small before. So it was just kind of an interesting visual. I mean, it was just kind of a wow. Okay, that's that girl. And a lot of people wanted to go up and get pictures holding her. And I don't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, she's still a person.
Right.
Let's be nice. She's still a person. Right. Come on, man.
So, but they had the and they it was cool to see these actors and for playing those characters get the love they were. I mean, there were a lot of people, you know, walking up and getting their autographs and whatnot. And that was cool. And, you know, last season was one that I enjoyed a little more than the other two. That was just my opinion. I'm not as big of American Horror Story as, that you and Ryan and Tony were.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, a show that I am kind of looking forward to, and I think it's because of Jamie Lee Curtis, is Scream Queens.
Yeah, Scream Queens is looking like it's getting really great reviews as well.
Right, so. And I think I really think it's mainly because of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis is fucking Hollywood royalty, and she still chooses to take on interesting roles, man.
I mean, she's horror royalty, you know?
And yeah, absolutely.
It's not every day we get her, you know, really doing something in horror again, especially at this point in her career. So that part of it's kind of intriguing and cool to me. So, we'll see. I mean, I think I'm going to check that show out for sure.
Got to do it. So right. We'll definitely check that out. You know, obviously maybe we can talk to Ryan and see if we can get him back on to address some of the sniping and snarkiness that's taking place within within that show that, you know, the show is about a bunch of girls. So, you know, there's going to be infighting and snark. Like, I think that goes without saying. So, yeah. Screen Queens, going to be good. We'll enjoy it. Let's see, what else? That's it for me, man.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, so, for everybody, we appreciate y'all listening, man. We appreciate y'all not just letting this go out into the void, but just going to your phones, your iTunes, your iPods, everything. We appreciate that. Again, Wicked Radio Network can be found. I'm sorry, Get Out the Room can be found on Wicked Radio Network, Listenopoly, Podomatic, iTunes, Stitcher Radio. We also have my other podcast, Situation Podomy. But one thing that we did want to pub and want to let everybody know, our old castmate, you guys may or may not remember, our guy Carl from Connecticut, he has decided to create a podcast of his own. It's a little bit more comic book, as that's really where a lot of his passion lies. And it's the Sons of the Dragon, the Immortal Iron Fist podcast. So if you guys want to go give my man Carl from Connecticut a shout and, you know, see what he's talking about, listen to his show.
He's an uber fan of Iron Fist, so
yeah,
it's an entertaining listen if you're into the comic book, and if you really like Iron Fist, you're gonna absolutely adore that show.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm sure they're gonna they start this up, and they're probably really looking forward to that that Iron Fist Netflix.
Gotta be.
Hell, I know I am. So
gotta be.
Yeah.
Between the Mystics and the Hand of Hands, it's gonna be pretty good, man.
Yep.
It's gonna be pretty good. So yeah, go support our guy. You know, give him a shout, listen to the show. Like Scott said, it's an entertaining listen. It's good. It's good luck.
Yep.
And so before I fall completely out over here, I'm about to be out, man. Appreciate y'all. We'll catch y'all next time.
Peace.